Καλημέρα, καλησπέρα, καληνύχτα. No matter where in this wild, wacky, and sometimes wonderful world you might be, thank you for making the Highbury Squad part of your day. It's a new week, it's a blank canvas, and the Arsenal won. Actually, they hammered West Ham. See what I did there? Let's rock and roll.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform. Please stand clear of the discussion doors. The next stop is Highbury Squad.
Hi everyone, how are you doing on this fine Monday? Starting a little earlier today for Monday Madness because we have a very special guest with us. Squaddies, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, no matter where you are. I lose my manners when Super Kev isn't here. At ease, everyone, at ease. Well done, James, well done. He's watching, there's no doubt he's watching. Those listening on replay, thanks for joining us, and those listening on our audio platforms too, we appreciate you. Welcome back to Squad Central. This is your third visit. James Green from Sky Sports News. Hola.
Thank you for having me, as always. It's always a pleasure. And I do apologize to everybody listening. I am full of cold, but Arsenal won 6-0, so nothing else matters. It's fine.
And nothing else matters. What a great song that
what
is, by the way.
What a song, Metallica.
What a song, what a tune. Yes, let's say good evening to some folks in the house. Squaddy's here, Trevor's here, Amira is here, K Marlon is here, Aditya's here. We have our chief like officer, Tammy Steels. Be sure to hit that like button. As you watch, remember to only nut it once. Twice will probably get you sent off. Ruth Beck, the very talented Ruth Beck in the house. Don't forget that Ruth has given you a lifetime discount on her art. I don't know if you've seen Ruth's stuff, James, but she's absolutely brilliant. She's a local artist. She's born and bred in Islington. She's a gooner and has been for a number of years. I don't want to age Ruth up because she's full of youth and energy. And she uses Arsenal is her muse. Islington is her muse. She does greeting cards, art. I mean, she's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And 20% off with the code Highbury Squad. Go visit Ruth's work, and you'll absolutely love it if you haven't seen it yet. Lovely to see her in the room. And also, by the way, on the ticker tape below, you can see. Kay Marlon is here. Dean is here. PW Galispera. Always love a Greek. You know, how can you not? And yeah, if I've missed anyone, I apologize. Carol's here. Hello, everyone. After an epic Sunday for the Gunners, we are here to talk and wax lyrical. James, the first time we spoke, why I invited James back on the show is about 8 months ago, we did an interview with James, and we talked about inside the mind of Mikel Arteta. Then a couple of months, we followed up the same theme with James having spent time with the gaffer at Colney, although it's called something else now. What is it called? Shaban? Something. They'll let me know.
It's London Colney to me still. So
it'll always be London Colney. and the reason why I'd have been thinking about this show before the win against West Ham, James, because, of course, went through a bit of a bad patch. There's a lot of noise in the Arsenal universe always, but when it comes to Mikel Arteta, it's very polarizing conversations. So I was thinking about this process and what that means and what it has meant, but what that process means in terms of leading to true progress. Was the progress doing well in the Premier League, but then missing out in the Champions League at the very death to your rivals? Would you consider that progress because you were in the game? But was the progress really last year in an improbable situation battling Manchester City for the Premier League? Was that just luck? Or are we now seeing this season the real progress from Mikel Arteta? And the reason why I named it Process to Perfecto is because for some fans, in order for any of this to work, James, in order for it to be true, to be real, to be a road path to success, that he has to be perfecto this season and we have to win something major this season. I'm definitely in the camp of he's got to win something soon. And definitely if he doesn't this season, if you fall out the top four, things like that, I think are unforgivable. But if you lose the title by a point to City or Liverpool, you know, does the man not deserve another shot and a trip around the sun? We know he's going to be here for a while. So with all that, when you look at yesterday's performance in the 6-0, and you've seen and spoken to Mikel this season, what's the difference between the discovery process and where we're at right now with him?
Yeah, so it's so interesting. And I think he's, as a guy and as a man and as a coach, he's an incredibly complex character, but full of layers, and really interesting layers. And I think we're still in the early stages of what we're seeing Mikel Arteta become. Let's not forget that, you know, the Arsenal job is his first managerial job. And I think it's easy for us all to kind of forget that because we're so impatient and we want success so quickly. And I know he's been here now, what, over 4 years. But for me, he's had a tough season, I think. I think he's had a tough season in regards to the fact that the expectations going into this year has changed completely because of the success the team had last year, coming so close to the title. So the expectations were risen. And look, he's a coach that is somebody who would adjust. He's not, I don't refer to him in the mold of an Arsene Wenger, who his biggest criticism was that he was so stubborn. And to the point, I think that was a detriment to him, certainly towards the end of his time at Arsenal. But for Mikel Arteta, he's always learning, he's always evolving, and he's always adjusting. And he's had to do that quite a lot this year because of the injury situation that the squad has had. You know, signing Julian Timber £45 million and then getting injured right at the start and out for, well, hopefully we'll see him back in maybe a month, 6 weeks, I don't know. So I think he's had to learn, he's had to adjust this season, and I think he's had to go through his own journey to taper expectations, to manage a situation where he's there becoming this season. It's been a really good season, and then as you mentioned, we had that down moment, and it was how he handled that, and I thought that was quite a poignant time, where four games without a win, a couple of poor defeats, one really bad defeat against Fulham. But it shows to me that when you give this man time, and you give him time on the training field, on the training ground, to work closely with his players, because this is a manager that likes to do that. He doesn't like to stand off. He's a man-to-man manager. He wants to be on that training ground. He wants to work individually and collectively as a team with his players. And to be able to be able to do that over the winter break period in Dubai with the squad, to be able, if we've had pretty much a week in between each game recently, we've had lots of time, so he's had lots of time with his players, and it's showcasing and it's showing. And if Sunday's defeat doesn't excite Arsenal fans of what's still to come from this group of players, I'm not quite sure what will. I think when you beat a West Ham side who've got such a great record against us recently in such a convincing way, but by doing it in a very different way. And I think that's where the evolving mind of Mikel Arteta works. Do Arsenal need a striker? Of course they do. But this is what we've got at the moment this season. And he's able to find and navigate around the current squad situation and adjust his team and adjust his tactics. Something that we didn't see last season. Much the same 11 every single week in, week out, and he would never really change anything. And he's had to evolve this season, and we saw that, I think, to fruition on Sunday. The way the fluidity between that front line was something that before the likes of Trossard, Havertz joined the club, we wouldn't have maybe been able to do that. And maybe he thought that himself, that he didn't have the personnel available to him. But we're seeing a manager now really show what he's all about and show his tactical nous. And I think it's there for all to see. It's improvement. And that's the word. He's always looking to improve.
Yeah, I think...
Sorry, that was a long answer, wasn't it?
No, I love it. Well, I gave you the long intro for it as well. You know, whether you were a fan of Arteta in his early days or not, I think it's undeniable that he has improved this club, you know, across the board. For me, the early process, James, was... how do I fix a broken football club that's become a little institutionalized with the reign of Wenger? And boy, don't worry, we're not going to, you know, slander Wenger in any way. Okay, so stay calm right there. But there's no doubt that he overstayed his welcome. And also, when you look at Manchester United and Arsenal, when you have long reigning managers like that, happens a lot sometimes here in the States with college sports, college football. You know, coaches become part of the institution. They become the face of the team, the college, the university. And similarly, Wenger and Sir Alex became the face of United and Arsenal. And Manchester United have fallen greatly, I think, partly because of that, you know, to not have succession plans or failed succession plans. And, you know, then you go through the manager to get to the right manager. And we've seen that at Manchester United, and people poo-pooed Mourinho a lot, but he won them two trophies. Mm-hmm. And then you see what happened with Emery. Emery was the stopgap guy, right? Maybe Arteta is or isn't going to be that guy that takes us to that kind of glory. But the process for me was the discovery on the culture of the club, mm-hmm. James, the DNA, the profiling of the player, and the fixing part of it, which sometimes some fans think, oh, we're giving him too much credit for that, and maybe Adu doesn't get enough credit, or Richard Garlick doesn't get enough credit. Before we get stuck into the nuts and bolts of the game and the kind of the perfecto part, the discovery process, I think the reason we're in this position now is because of all the cleanup and the debris and removing the cancer from the dressing room, changing the vibe and the philosophy at Colney. You've spent time at the club in its good days and its bad. Am I on or off on this one?
You're absolutely on. It's been the culture change, and Mikel talked about that from the first day he arrived, and he still continues to talk about it to this day. And it was that shifting culture that he wanted to bring into Arsenal. And that's not an easy fix. And we do need to understand as fans that things like that can take time. You're spot on when you talk about Arsene Wenger. Arsene Wenger was, by the way, I'm not slandering Arsene Wenger before anybody accuses me of that. Not at all. I love the man. He did such wonderful things for our club. And he had to shift the culture himself when he arrived. And that took time. He just happened to hit the nail on it straight away and breathe that success so early on. And then all of a sudden, everything shifted and evolved as it went on. But look, yeah, you're spot on. It was so much of his work, Mikel Arteta. And this is why, do you remember, he was originally like head coach. And then they changed and made him mm-hmm. manager because they knew his value throughout the whole club. So it wasn't just his value on the training ground, developing the players, setting them up tactically to play their games. It was what he can bring elsewhere at the club. So we're talking about improving the youth setup, working with the youth players. We're talking about a complete philosophical overhaul of the culture at Arsenal at that time. And the culture wasn't good enough. You know, we all know, we all can admit it. We all saw it because it all breeds onto the pitch. The pitch is the finale. This is where we see what happens behind the scenes. It happens on the mm-hmm. field, and we see the results of that. And if there's not good results on the field, a lot of that is down to then what's going on throughout the rest of the club. And his responsibility was alongside, yes, the likes of Edu, Richard Garlick, etc., that you mentioned, was to transform this club, was to get it back to an era of success for Arsenal, where we are challenging at the top of the Premier League. We are competing deep into the Champions League, and we are one of those teams that people are looking at and going, they're going to win a major trophy very soon. And I think for in today's climate, it's very difficult for a football manager to be able to do that. And not many have done it. There's very few. And he's been one of those that's been able to do that to improve on the football side. Yes, fans have had to, we've had to be patient. There's no doubt about it. But we saw what happened last season, the development this team's making. And we're seeing the work behind the scenes as well, in unison with the team, supporting the success of what we're seeing on the pitch, in the financial market. He's being trusted alongside, again, Edu, Richard Garlick, etc., to bring in the right players with the right personalities to develop them. He's and I actually think in regards to all of this, one of his biggest achievements is the development of a certain Bukayo Saka. And for me, the way he's worked with him over the last 4.5 years to become the player that he's becoming now, he still, I think, can go to another level, and he's improving constantly. I mean, what, 50 Arsenal goals. It's that shouldn't be a miss. You know, we shouldn't forget about this, that he is now making players better. Players are coming into this football club now, in my opinion, and he is making them better, as well as doing all the work behind the scenes. And for me, as a fan, everyone will have their opinions, and some see the game differently to me. Some see it more short-term and want short-term success and not worried about maybe a manager staying a long period of time. For me, I like one man, one culture, and to see how long we can prolong that success. And for me, Mikel Arteta's that guy. And I think he's proven it week in, week out to us all.
Yeah. I mean, we only have to kind of look back and see Liverpool's heartache. How many Premier Leagues, what they missed out on, two Premier Leagues? Is it two or one by 1 point? Two by 1 point.
I think it's two by one. But the one they won by
a stretch. Yeah. But and some of the listeners and fans don't like it when I bring Liverpool up a lot, but I think they're a really good example. If I was doing a comp, you know, when I'm working, I've got my film hat on, and I'm working on the PR campaign for, you know, Mission Impossible 700. My comp is going to be, maybe a Marvel. You have to find the right comp. And I think Liverpool is a good comp for us in terms of the journey and the progress. And you mentioned something, and I think it goes missing in sports a lot. The preparation, and I think I'm starting to respect this a little bit more as I get older, James, and my life is less about instant gratification. And, you know, people laughed at Mikel when he talked about the journey versus the destination.
Yeah.
And I always find, and I've been thinking about that a lot, because, and certain things happen in life that make you feel and think differently, and significant things as well outside of work and sports and stuff. And there's something to be said about this journey, right? And when you start piecing the puzzle together with his language, his strategies, mission statement, and philosophy, like process, what does that really mean? The process to me now means the journey, right? And that moment with Lacazette, that exchange, there was some that felt like he maybe embarrassed him. But, you know, we all have different viewpoints on the life's journey and stuff. And for me, as a fan, I'm enjoying the journey again, because the destination, you know how that feels. Okay, we're going to win something. We're going to celebrate. We're going to get drunk, have a bad hangover, probably, if you don't. Enjoy your cup of tea, whatever it is, your big cake, and kind of keep the machine going. And it's funny, because when I was watching the Super Bowl yesterday, and I was thinking, man, this Niners team, how have they not won a Super Bowl yet? They're so good. And Shanahan, the coach, started this journey, this process with this team, going through quarterbacks, having to remove older players, an amazing defense. Like, I like the analogy of different sports as well, because I know Arteta likes that too. And he's in a group with coaches from the NFL and the Rams coach and stuff. And the journey for me last season became fun again. And as a fan, I'm enjoying it, and I'm not getting my knickers in a twist when we lose. I'm not going supersonic like I used to. I'm not reacting. I'm noodling.
100%.
And, you know, maybe I'm blah-blahing right now, but the journey part, James, to me, has become a fundamental piece of what he has been trying to not only articulate to fans or the media, but to his players. And I think this season, they're in for this journey. They're showing that they can overcome adversity early. And I've questioned always with this Arsenal team, the mental side, do you have this? Mm-hmm. Because we know you're super talented. So the journey part for me this season, I think, has the ingredients of being something special based on the fact that it comes from his process.
Definitely. You know, this is, if you, we only have to look back at, you know, how seasons have ended for Arsenal over the last couple. You know, missing out on the Champions League, just missing out on the Premier League, just this squad and these young players, because they are young. Let's not forget, last season in particular, I think it was only Southampton had a younger squad than Arsenal, which is brilliant. That's great. We're competing for Premier League titles with such a young squad. They will learn and become mentally stronger through those experiences. That's the only way you learn in life is by failure. We learn by failure all the time. You know, we try something, doesn't work. We try something else, and we navigate ourselves through life until we find that moment and everything clicks into place and it starts working. And that journey last season and the season before that will help these players so much. Now, what the Arsenal manager is able to do is able to bring in now players that have had success. Now, thoughts on Kai Havertz, that's fine. We spoke about him before, I'm sure. But this is somebody who's a winner. You know, he's won at the highest level in the Champions League final, scoring a goal in the final. Declan Rice won a European trophy for West Ham last season. These are winners coming to our club to help build that mentality alongside the likes of Gabriel Jesus, Oleksandr Zinchenko. These are all players that have been winning and they've been drafted into this squad, this young squad. And they're all going to go through this process together, but that's only going to help Arsenal. Now, the process is interesting, and the language he uses and has used from day one has always been fascinating. Now, I've been a believer, and I've been on that process train since day one. And the only one of the reasons why that I love the way he spoke, I thought he was really honest at the start. He won a trophy in that first season. That trophy gave him the patience from the owners. Now, I spoke to him about that. And he said, and we talk about patience, and everybody's talking about, you know, patience in football. And there's been a long period where a lot of other managers who might find themselves under a little bit of pressure refer to Mikel Arteta and go, well, look at Arsenal. Look at the process Arsenal went through. Look at the time Mikel Arteta was given at Arsenal. And I spoke to Mikel about that. And I said, look, you know, all these other managers are referencing your journey. And he said, you can only have the patience if you're showing improvement and you're bringing success to the club. And so he knows that you're only going to get that trust from above is if they're seeing fundamental changes and improvements in what you're doing. Now, I don't think, in my opinion, I don't know if anybody can look at Arteta's record at Arsenal and say he hasn't been improving. We slowly clawed up. Yes, the second season probably was a bit of a struggle, but we finished, I think, nearly 20 points closer to the top of the table than the horrors of the season before. You know, he won a trophy. We're then slowly finding that transition up to what we saw last season. Again, it's improvements. And I think as fans, we like you said, you're on this process train and you're trusting what's going on and you trust in the journey and you're not overreacting. I think that's such a key point, actually, where I think as our Arsenal fans, football fans in general overreact, but Arsenal fans might be the most overreactive fans out there. You know, a defeat, it's the world's ending and this is that. But I just, for me, it's the manner and it's how we lose games and that what sort of response are we seeing from the players. So, like, for example, the West Ham at home, Liverpool home in the FA Cup. For me, we just go, okay, it's one of them things. I thought we played pretty well. And, you know, on another occasion, we beat West Ham 8-2 or something, as we saw really on Sunday. Liverpool FA Cup, again, I've never seen us have so many chances against the Liverpool side, certainly in the last 7-8 years. You know, this is a manager, Jurgen Klopp, that seems to have had Arsenal's and Mikel Arteta's number for some time. But we've seen improvements and we've seen performances against these sides. It's like with the Manchester City game at home. You know, and this is where Mikel Arteta found a different way of playing. It wasn't very exciting. It was actually probably the most boring game of football we'd seen all season, potentially. But it wasn't in the 87th minute when we scored. So we're seeing improvements in small areas, and that's important. So whether it's like a victory over Man City, a team that we never seem to be able to beat, or a victory over Liverpool, a team we never seem to beat. And look, and we're seeing reactions. And what's the reaction been from that run over Christmas? Well, 4 wins in a row, and we're finally being clinical and scoring goals. Like, it's we're seeing that, and we've got, I just feel like there just should be this real sense of positivity around the coach and what he's able to bring out of these players. Because let's be honest, look, the coach has a big responsibility. We know that. But when they cross that white line, it is down to the players. But the players are impacted so highly by what they're being coached, what they're being drilled, what they're being spoke about before they go out to play. And the mindset that the coach is able to get these players in, week out. And I'll tell you what, apart from that Fulham game, I don't know if I've seen a poor mindset on the pitch this season from this Arsenal bunch.
Yeah, even in that West Ham game, you could feel like it wasn't a weak mindset. It was a look on the face of, it's just not our day. You know, when you just know as a fan too, there's just some days you wake up and you're like, oh, I've got a horrible feeling about this. It felt like for the first time in the season, they just didn't believe they'd get out of the hole they were in. Whereas I think in most games, they've had that mindset, but the finishing has, you know, killed Arsenal this season, really. And then when that was happening, the defense lost a little confidence. And I think that had a little to do with getting used to playing with Raya. That's clicked in. I don't think, you know, most fans, I didn't like the change at all. I wasn't a fan of making that kind of bold move. We talked to Stevie Nicol last week and ex-Luton Town manager Paul Buckle about the big decisions that he's made. And that was definitely one that they did not agree with. And Stevie Nicol actually still thinks, and they both think, that Ramsdale maybe has the edge as the better keeper. But for the way we want to play, it's working. And I don't think you could deny that of him. But
this is... This is the manager we have. He's a manager that's trying to find little percentages, and he's trying desperately to find. And for some, that might be too much. It's going too close. But for him, if he sees Raya has given us 1% more than Ramsdale, then he's going to go for Raya. And that is literally his mindset. If he sees any area of the team that he thinks he can get an element of improving out, bear in mind that gap to Man, he looks at the gap, he talks about the gap to the top. Bear in mind that's a 5-point gap to Manchester City, right? How can I claw that back? That's his mindset. How can I get, where can I find 5 points? And he looks at that.
It's so true. Like, that's how the really good managers and coaches look at the fine margins, right? How did we lose? How can we fix that? Knowing that's in front of you as well.
Absolutely. And look, you know, it was a gamble. There has to be an element of a gamble. But all I'd say is, like, look at how the squad reacted. Was there a negative reaction to Raya coming in? Not at all. Did the performances drop? No. You know, they're really, I thought they learned pretty quickly. And we're seeing that now. You know, we've got the best defensive record in the league. It's an important aspect of it. And it's showing that, you know, he made that change. The players are fully behind the manager. Now, bear in mind, Aaron Ramsdale, very popular player, very popular with the squad. But the players still, they followed the manager and they trusted in what he was doing. And it hasn't affected their performances. And that just says, again, a great deal about Mikel Arteta.
And I want to get from that discovery process and the inside the mind from the second episode, we talked about to progress and perfecto for him, because there's some comments coming up, and I'll put some of your comments up for James in a second as well. Guys, it's comments like this from fans that I really appreciate. I like how he finally just played Trossard instead of Eddie, something we were all crying for. We've talked about his ego and his stubbornness. And a lot of the times, in order to take on these jobs, you have to have a big ego. You have to be a megalomaniac, a healthy one, not an unhealthy one. And you have to be willing to make major sacrifices. When we chatted to Rebecca Lowe, she was like, I think this is, you know, this is Mikel's list when he talks about his priorities for the day. Arsenal, the wife and kids, right?
It's so true. Yeah.
And this is what Arsenal fans want and need. So I wanted to tap into your tactical brain a little bit, James, because you mentioned too about finding fine margins, ways to win. And it was funny on a show about a year and a half ago with Super Kev and David Hillier, when we were struggling a little bit, the two of them were like, I just don't understand why he doesn't play the 4-4-2 more. I don't understand why he just doesn't kind of stop trying to put square pegs in round holes and maybe do not basic things, but things that your team can respond to. And I found like, as much as he's imposing his will and the way he wants to play this season with the possession-based football, we're seeing less of the square pegs, round holes, you know, Xhaka at left back, Thomas Partey at right back. I also think sometimes he's probably forced into decisions based on who's available, right? Every manager is. But what I was listening to Robbie Musto on the NBC broadcast here yesterday. He's like, I'm blown away. He really just, I've never heard them rave more. And we've beaten City, we've thrashed Tottenham. You know, we've beaten big clubs, not only this season, last season. But he was so impressed with Arteta's managerial strategy in this particular game. He was talking about being a 4-4-2 in possession, a 4-3-3 out of possession, the movement. You know, yet last season we had speed chaos. And this season, it seems like he's gone up a level, even though maybe people don't like the way we've played and it's more pragmatic and it isn't as sexy and fast and we're not killing teams off by halftime, although we did yesterday. So what do you think about what you saw yesterday? To me, tactically, it felt like, wow, I know we've beaten City. I know we've gotten results against Liverpool. It just seems like he's so in control of this match.
Yeah, it was definitely peak Mikel Arteta yesterday. Yeah, it was. I watched it and I was blown away, actually. As Arsenal fans, we've got to be patient with what we always see. When teams set up against Arsenal, we all know what majority of the league are going to do. They're all going to sit back and they're going to try and counter us. That's what they've got to do. So Arsenal's issue is always, right, we've got to try and figure out a different way of playing. We've got to try and figure out a way of breaking this low block, so to speak, down. Mm-hmm. Against a team like West Ham, we have to be really careful because they can break so quickly. As we've seen, Bowen's punished us before, kudos, exactly the same. You've got to be really careful against a team like that. They're usually very organised. And Mick Arteta sprung a surprise. And for me, the surprise was, yes, I know somebody said we've been calling out for Leandro Trossard to play. We didn't play up front. Mick Arteta said to Leandro Trossard, you play where the hell you want to play. In certain, there's much more deeper, it's much deeper than that. But he gave him the freedom to move around. And the one thing about Mick Arteta is that he is, and as a player, if you remember him as a player, he was so unselfish. He was an unselfish player. And when I hear people talk about what he was like when he was younger, I was reading something or watching an interview with Pepe Reina, who grew up with him in the La Masia training camp at Barcelona. And he said he was just the most unselfish of players. Mm. Now, what that means is he knew his job, because if he played a certain way, that would benefit the team. And I think this is something we're seeing fully in action. So he's being able to control the egos within the football team to be able to say, look, I know you might think you can do X, Y, Z, but by just doing X, that's going to benefit us here. It's going to benefit us here. And again, and that's where everyone's buying into this philosophy. And I think the fluidity at the front line, I think it's something he craved. I think this for me is progression. This is something I feel he's really wanted ever since he took over at Arsenal, was the fluidity going forward. He's always been a manager that wants, you know, his sides to be defensively sound, but he really wants that interacting, moving around, not being stuck in certain positions. And if you've got the players who are smart enough, intelligent enough to play that way, then you're able to do that. And what happened with Trossard and Havertz? They just moved around, interchanged. Nobody was up front. We didn't play with a forward. And the West Ham defenders had no idea. They didn't know what to do. And that was the change he made. Now, that way of playing might not work against a different side, like top of my head, Brentford or Brighton, whoever it might be. And this is the development that we're seeing from Mikel Arteta. He's brought in certain players to play different ways of football. And this is what he had spoken to me about in the summer. And this is what he had said to me, that we are looking at bringing these players in because we have to develop. We have to keep moving forward. We can't sit still and rest on our laurels and go, yeah, great, second was a good season. It wasn't enough for him. He was absolutely devastated. And, you know, you spoke about, who was it? Was Rebecca Lowe, about the order. And and again, I when I spoke to him in the summer, and I said to him, how was your break? What did you get up to? Oh, you know, I was on holiday with a family. And I went, how much were you actually on holiday? He went, well, yeah, I was on my phone every day. And I had to explain that to the wife, and I got in trouble a lot. But yeah, I tried so hard to switch off. But he didn't, because he isn't, and he's not that sort of character, and he is fully ingrained in Arsenal. But yeah, look, tactically, you just can't criticize anything from Sunday, in my opinion. And even to the point of, even to the point of Kivior, I know the left back options we've been really struggling with, but he's solely gone out there and said to Kivior, we don't need you to go forward today. We don't really need you. We need you actually to be really, really solid alongside Gabby and Saliba. We don't really want you pushing up on that side, because that's where Kudos likes to be, and we need you defensively there. Whereas that then, because he's dropping an extra player into the midfield, having no forward, we don't need Kivior moving up and down. You got Martinelli always going to bring that width on the left hand side, but even he moved inside more than we've probably seen him for a while. So look, it was just utter brilliance. Great work on the training ground. Players bought into it. And finally, we were clinical.
And I think that's the difference, isn't it? And I agree with Kay Marlon. The tactical masterclass in the last two games has been ingenious. Most pundits questioned the rotation, but it's bloody worked. In the West Ham, wouldn't lay glove on us. Yeah, they couldn't. And this is a West Ham team that for a while was lauded. Kudus is one of the signings of the summer. You know, he's been great for them. He really has. So I think too, London Derby, and to silence this West Ham team, who have been good in the last season and a half, the way that we did it, this to me was an evolutionary last 2 weeks for Mikel Arteta as Arsenal manager. Now, I'm not saying he's the greatest of all time. I'm not saying that he's going to win us everything. But what I am saying is you can see, and these fine margins that you talk about in our evolution, the set pieces, can we just talk about that for a second? Goes into his, now I know he's got assistant coaches and they're probably saying, hey, these are the fine margins. We need to do this season, that. Look at the, how do we use the ball at throw-ins? What do we do from playing out the back? But the set pieces,
it's got to improve some of the throw-in business.
It's a little rough. But the set pieces, 11 goals just from corners, 4 from our centre back pairing, and I don't know. Like Gabby XL has completely come alive And I wanted you to talk to me about the set piece coach a little bit. I don't know if you've spoken to him when you've been down at training. Of course, we know his history, having worked at Manchester City and stuff. But this type of arsenal in your toolbox has made such a major difference. And also Declan Rice taking the set pieces, the delivery. I mean, this has become a true X factor for us. Talk me through that a little bit, James.
Yeah, it has. A really good point about the set pieces. And just onto the West Ham quickly. Remember, we all remember last season, 2-0 up, and we drew 2-2. This season, they knew it. The players knew it. 2-0 wasn't enough. And they had, their mentality was completely different. So we see the development of the squad, and we see the development of their mental state. Compare that to last season when we were 2-0 up, foot was off the gas. The players just completely relaxed. This season, it wasn't enough. And that was just seeing that hunger. 2's never enough. And they know it now. And I feel we may see more games like this where this ruthless streak comes out. But set pieces, look, it's terrific. It's brilliant. And the adaptations and the changes that we're already seeing this year compared to last year. Last year, we were pretty good as well. But this year, the way that every single set piece, there is a new way of doing it. There is, right, we're going to do either, we've all seen it where all the players are at the back. They all run to the near post. The amount of times they're getting that ball on top of the goalkeeper. What's been missing for Arsenal is somebody to take them, you know. We've watched Leandro Trossard, bless him. He's a lovely fella, brilliant footballer, so smart, so intelligent. But my God, he can't take a corner. he can't take a corner. So let's get him off the corners. And look, Declan's just showing, you know, how good he is as a footballer. I think you weigh up, don't you? And this is what they'll do, the coaching staff, the set piece coach, will weigh up, right, Declan, we know he's got the height in the box. We know he can head the ball. He can be quite dangerous in the box at set pieces. But they've also uncovered his ability on the ball from dead ball situations. And I mean, goodness me, his delivery was just exceptional yesterday.
Yeah.
And if you've got somebody who's able to deliver it on a sixpence, and you've got players that are willing to attack that ball like Gabriel, who I think I read a stat that since he joined the league, no other player in the Premier League has scored more set-piece goals than him. I think he's got maybe one more than James Ward-Prowse now. And that's his influence. But he's hungry. He wants to score. Yeah. Saliba's getting the same. And I think I'm assuming, and this is an assumption, and I will find out, but I'm assuming there is a proper competition between those two about how many goals they can score. I think their relationship is like that, that they're both like going up there, going, I want to get my head on this. And this is brilliant. The hunger in the box to attack these balls. And, you know, this is an Arsenal side that all everybody talks about for so long is their ability on the ball, the interchanging passing, their movement, beautiful on the eye, the likes of Erdegaard, the likes of Saka. Well, actually, one of our strongest areas are set pieces. And one of the reasons they've developed it, probably to a level where it is this season, is not only from reacting to last season where teams just started to learn and understand how we were going to play. And they were going to learn and they were going to frustrate us even more. Doubling up on Saka, doubling up on Martinelli, not allowing that interchanging passing. So there were going to be periods in games where we're sitting there 30, 40 minutes, 50, 60 minutes. It's 0-0. We've had all the ball. Can't seem to create a clear-cut chance. So how else can we do it? Well, I'll tell you what, because we have so much of the ball, we create so many opportunities to win corners and free kicks, and set pieces become paramount. And they've looked at that and gone, right, we've got to maximise these because these are opportunities. And you know what it's like for Arsenal? We watch Arsenal week in, week out. We get that first goal, all of a sudden, space opens up on the pitch and it becomes easier for the players to play. When teams start coming at Arsenal, that's where we've got them. That's where Arsenal want them because the space is there for that quick counter with Saka, Martinelli, the movement, Erdegaard creating space and finding space to do his magician things that we saw on Sunday. But so much of it comes from set pieces. and you can see the work they're putting on the training ground.
And yeah.
Brilliant. Because I don't know about you, but before maybe last couple of seasons, we went through many, many years of watching Arsenal and it'd be a corner and we'd James. Just be like... Oh,
I used to say to Super Kev and Archangel here, our listener in Australia, g'day, any professional footballer should be able to deliver it on a sixpence. There's part of this, listen, we're not all great at our job every day, but you've got to put in the effort. And I said to Kev, if my player isn't clearing the first defender on a corner, I'm fining him every single time he does that. It is one of my biggest pet peeves. And I thought to myself yesterday, self, you haven't complained about this as much this season, and there's a reason why. And you know, you've just underlined it with Rice. But also, I read a stat, and I don't know if this is true, Squaddies. Maybe you could help me. That Gabriel has become our highest scoring centre back ever with 14 goals. Is that right? I think I have this stat. His second highest Arsenal defender in history with 14 goals, I think, after Thomas Vermaelen. I don't know if that's a true, real stat, but go Google it, kids, and see. And I wanted to I had five talking points under Mikel Arteta and Perfecto, and I'm going to get these ones on a hot take because we're running a bit out of time here with James. But there's... I wanted to stick on Gabby because a lot of the times everyone keeps saying that, you know, he looks good because he has Saliba behind him. And one of our listeners just put in the chat, actually, they think that Saliba's looked so good. Maybe it's not a popular take, but maybe he's looked so good because he's had Gabby beside him. He's definitely come into his own. He did the interview with The Independent last week, got to find a little bit more about his thinking, his train of thought, the confidence that he has, scoring. I mean, to have a centre-back pairing like this and scoring goals from set pieces, incredible stuff. Real quick on the evolution and going back to that discovery, the process with Arteta, making players better, which he got criticised early on for not doing. And I believe I criticised him over the Martinelli stuff because I just wanted Martinelli to play. But I think he's one of our most improved players under Mikel.
I think he was the Premier League's most improved player last season.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I really believe it. I've sung his praises ever since last year, ever since I started seeing him stop being so rash, stop making those really poor decisions, being uber aggressive when he didn't need to, getting himself dragged into situations with players that he never needed to. He was somebody that you could wind up, and now he's so much calmer. He stays on his feet more. He's becoming intelligent. And where does that come from? It comes from a manager, an intelligent manager who will go deep with a player and really get into that mindset of that player. And he'll sit down and spend the time with them because that's what he does. And this is the kind of guy he is. And look, Gabby, I was controversial, I think, in saying this last season, but I thought, you know, certainly after the World Cup break, he was our best defender. And I know Saliba got injured in March, but in that period, I thought Saliba really dropped off, in my opinion. And I thought Gabby was the one that actually held that defence together. I thought his performances were superb. I think he definitely struggled when Saliba wasn't alongside him. I think that's fair to say, that partnership they've got between the two of them. But he's not just kind of gone, okay, that was my peak. He's gone, okay, I've got another level to get to. And we're seeing it this season. He's gone to a new level again. And the relationship and partnership between two centre-backs is, we all know in football, is so important. I mean, we should know more than most. Us and Man United fans know more than most the importance of a solid centre-back pairing. We're talking, you know, going back to Adams, Bolt, you know, Campbell, Torre, United with Rio and Vidic. You know, these are just partnerships that become pivotal to the success of sides. And with Gabby and Saliba, we're seeing that. But Gabriel, yeah, look, for me, he's been it's just been excellent. I love the fact he's taken out this rashness of his game. He's not diving in anymore. He's staying on his feet. And that's just helping the side so much. He's reducing the amount of mistakes he's making, barely making a mistake at the moment, in my opinion. He provides that physical presence alongside Saliba, who we know, if he has got a problem and struggles, that is the physical side of the game for Saliba. But Gabby's got that. I've got to be honest, he's becoming my favourite Arsenal player. Don't tell anyone.
Don't tell anyone either, because Super Kev and I have been wanting to give him flowers since last season. And, I love him. I really, really just love everything about how this guy plays football. And, yeah, I call them Beauty and the Beast. They remind me of Vidic and Ferdinand a little bit.
They are, but Gabby's getting so much better on the ball. Do you know?
Yeah, his distribution is much better. His distribution
is so much better, mm-hmm. and his decision-making is getting better as well. And that's, again, it's just showing his evolution as a player himself. He's just getting so much better.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay, cool. I've another couple bits for you here. So the other player I wanted to talk about, because, again, some fans don't get him. Some fans always want him to look like Zidane or someone of that ilk. Some, I don't think, appreciate how he works in the shadows. And maybe because of that, you don't really get to see the best of him in every game. But my goodness, yesterday, there's a lot of things I want to say about Odegaard. So I'm going to scrap talking about Saka, because we all know Saka's great. And James mentioned Saka at the very start. 50 goals, amazing. He's absolutely brilliant. But in order for Saka to be able to do this, thank you BBC Sport for this picture, there has to be some creator, a generator. And I love this moment too. There's so many things about Odegaard I loved yesterday. Where do I begin? Number one, he was like Leonard Bernstein yesterday. He conducted that game like a world-class player. It was his orchestra. He boosted the violins when he wanted to, got the trumpets going. And the other thing I love is the leadership yesterday, because when Wanneri came on, this to me, when a lot of fans also, what I don't appreciate is when they just want Declan Rice to be captain. And I get it. You know, Declan Rice is an amazing player and maybe one day he will be. But when you see this kid, by the way, I love this picture.
Fantastic.
He's passing the ball to him and he's literally saying to him, here you go. Go on, son. Enjoy. Have a good time. And the way he involved him in the game as soon as he came on, I just thought was phenomenal leadership. I thought his passing yesterday was ridiculous. Everything about what he did, James, was just first class. And for me, his best ever game for Arsenal in terms of wanting to see the player that you want, Arsenal fans, pulling the strings, making plays, cutthroat passes, delicate passes, being a leader. Am I going over the top about Odegaard? Because I don't think I am.
So if you can never go over the top, it's fine. Never. Keep it going. Yeah, look, he was phenomenal, wasn't he? I picked up on the Wanneri thing as well. And it's just great leadership. You know, young 16-year-old, go on, lad. And boy, did he show what he could do, by the way. What a player he could be. What a person to learn from in Bukayo Saka on that right-hand side. But look, for Odegaard, I think he's had not as impactful season as perhaps last season. I think that's pretty fair to say. I think if you certainly looking at the stats, it's pretty obvious. I think there's been a shift in how teams defend against him as well. I think he's found that his space has been shut down quite a lot. There's a lot of teams that actually set somebody on him and say, you stick with him. Don't let him get the ball, because we know his influence when he can. And I think Odegaard's had to learn. He's had to adapt. He's had to understand that, okay, there's going to be games where I'm not going to get the ball as much, but where can I influence proceedings? And I think he's slowly getting there again. It's, you know, it's work in progress on the training field. But as a leader, he might not have been everybody's number one to lead this side. Now, I spoke to him, I would say, a couple of years ago, I want to say, maybe it was longer. I have to go back and have a look. And I remember speaking to him about, you know, potentially one day captain of the side. Bear in mind, he was Norway captain. He's, I think, was the youngest ever Norwegian captain. And to be given that responsibility at such a young age, obviously he had the qualities. And he didn't want to get drawn into it too much, but he was like, I like being in charge. I like that responsibility. Mm-hmm. I thrive off it, I think is what he said to me. And you're seeing it now in full action, but you're also seeing it from the likes of what others say about him. So when you mention, yeah, maybe we see Declan Rice as our captain, who doesn't? Like, I think we all, Declan Rice is he's that captain mold material. Everything about him oozes captaincy, which is great. Doesn't have to wear the armband, but he's got that on the pitch. He's got that authority. But the way he speaks about Ødegaard says everything you need to know. So every time you hear Declan Rice talk about what the skipper's doing, he mentions the skipper almost every single time he does an interview about what the skipper's saying. So when was it? After the Liverpool game, shining example of this. Now, at halftime, obviously, we'd conceded the goal. As fans, well, I think we all kind of scratched our head and went, oh, not again, not again, not again. And when Declan spoke after, he said that the skipper kept us all believing. He kept us all believing in what we can do, that we're doing everything right, to keep going, to not focus on that, to look ahead, to look further forward. And you're thinking, hold on a minute, this is Declan Rice, somebody that we envisage as this captain superb. Mm-hmm. What an amazing skipper he was at West Ham. Unbelievable job taken over from Mark Noble. And he's talking in that regards to our captain, Martin Ødegaard. Might not be the biggest personality, say, in the squad, but I tell you what, this is a player that has the respect of every single Arsenal player in that dressing room and has the respect of Mikel Arteta. There's a reason why he's chosen him as his captain. And I think we're slowly going to start seeing it, as we saw examples on Sunday of his influence with the armband and on the pitch, because he was not only sensational, but his leadership was brilliant. And again, I reiterate what I said about, they remember last season at the West Ham Stadium, 2-0 up, drawing the game 2-2 in absolute cruise control. And he was one of those players who was key to ensuring that they didn't do that again. And you should see his energy at 2-0. He was popping around, looking forward, attacking as quickly as he possibly can. Prime example, Trossard's goal. There was intent to let rest on our laurels. We're going to finish this job off properly. And that's the kind of leader that, as an Arsenal fan, I'm delighted to have leading our side.
I was like, wow, look at him. He's hunting for the ball every second in this match today. He is not leaving here without a win. He's not leaving here without creating chances.
It's like the Liverpool game. He did exactly the same. 96th minute, he was still closing players down, pressing. Just incredible. Incredible mindset. And that's what you want from your captain.
And you know what, James, you talk about, and I love your insights, because you're there, you spend time with the players, you see them. And when you do see them, I got the pleasure of covering when I was in Cyprus, a couple of months ago, actually a few more months ago, the last qualifiers. And I was really lucky because Norway were playing Cyprus, and I went to the game and I got a press pass and I got to speak to him after the match. And it's so, even his leadership in that national team, and of course he's the captain, but you see the difference in a player like Haaland. Okay, he's younger, but the way Haaland was kind of, and you see it at media, there's certain players that just get wrapped in cotton wool and they're ushered out the back door and it's like, bye-bye, off they go. And he's the face, really, and the name everybody wants to see and speak to. But I find that players like that don't always give the best interviews anyway. And then you've got Martin Ødegaard, who's a thinker. I mean, just the way he carried himself even then, you know, when I saw him on the national stage for his country, all of the things you said and all of the things that we see, I saw in person, you know, going from one to the other, to then talking to his communications team, to then, you know, from being responsible to getting people. I mean, he was just doing everything. And you could feel that he loves that. It's not a burden for him. He just loves and thrives on that leadership role. And I'm hoping that we see more of that this season. He was carrying a bit of a hip injury, wasn't he, earlier? Wasn't playing as well. And I think you could see that in his play. He had Xhaka last season, like one of our listeners just said. But this evolving, developing midfield now, I thought Havertz, some of you thought I was going to mention Havertz because it was a work in the shadows comment, but I thought Havertz was good yesterday. Doesn't have, this is the thing, not every player has to be a rock star. Not everyone has to be like Saka or Martinelli. You don't, it's not heavy metal. Right? Sometimes you just want R&B.
Unselfish.
Mm-hmm.
Havertz, unselfish. The most unselfish player probably in that side yesterday. Because he's not the focal point. He's not the number one. And he accepts that. And he accepts his role. And he does what the team needs. And for Havertz to occupy defenders, for Havertz to get the ball, pass it on, move, get in the box when he can, his work off the ball does so much for everybody else. And it's unselfish. And this is something that breeds from the manager. From the manager's youth, what he was like as a young man and a young guy and a young player, he was an unselfish man, an unselfish player. And we're seeing that philosophy come into this side. And Kai Havertz is a prime example of that. He knows his role, and that's good enough. And that's good enough for him because he knows the benefit that will bring to the rest of the side. Maybe there's more to this Havertz signing than we all think. Maybe a lot of it's down to his personality.
I think so. Listen, and I haven't poo-pooed. Could he be a $65 million bust? Well, yeah, I mean, sure, he could be. But we're still here and we're out the domestic cups and it's not because of Havertz. I don't think some of the has he set the world on fire? No, but again, he's just not that type of player. Everyone expects him to be this goal-scoring machine. And maybe his game, and he's evolved since Germany. So you're seeing a different type of player now. But what I like is it's not square pegs, round holes. Like I said earlier, James, he's looking at the player profile, DNA and personality, and he's adapting more. And I think you're seeing this and going through that adversity earlier this season rather than later like last season, maybe was a good thing. For Mikel Arteta as well, to realize, you know what? I have to open up my playbook a little bit here. I'm going to need a little bit more if we're going to win this. And I just think that what he did yesterday and what this team did yesterday was absolutely brilliant. Right. We've talked about the process to perfecto. We've talked about Saka, Odegaard, a little bit of Havertz, Trossard, the set piece kings, the differences. James, before I let you go, in summary, which was your favorite goal? And do you see a different mental attitude this season that could keep the Gunners right up there with Liverpool and City? I mean, you know, Tottenham aren't going anywhere either, are they? They're still hanging around this place. So what was your favorite goal and what do you see next for the Arsenal?
Oh, favorite goal. So... this is a horrible question because I loved the set piece goals because I just continue to love the work they're doing with set pieces. I thrive off that. I just think it's great, this excitement. We get a corner and I'm sitting there watching going, oh, we might score this. So I love the set piece goals. Look, the run that Saka made to win the penalty, I love that. I want to see more of that when we get the opportunity to get the ball in behind. And we, you know, against a team that defends so deep, it's not always easy. But we picked and chose that moment perfectly well. One of the only moments I think we had to really go in behind over the top down the middle. So I love that. But Declan Rice scoring at last, finally getting his win against West Ham that no doubt about it was on his mind. He would not have liked how the last two games have gone against his old club. So that was fantastic. I love that. And the second question, I think we're improving mentally? Yeah, absolutely. I think we're learning quicker. I don't think we're making the same mistakes as we did last season. I think we're creating it. Undo me with stats, but for me, it looks like we're creating more. We do need to be more clinical. It's been a great four games, no doubt about it, but that's got to continue. Mikel's always mentioned about goals coming from everywhere, and we saw that last season. We've got to keep seeing that this season. I think the improvements the side's making, the results against Man City, Liverpool, West Ham, these are big occasions. But look, there's a lot of time left, and it's not going to be easy. You know, Man City are a juggernaut. Liverpool are exceptional this season. We're just going to keep. It's so. See, I've been spending too much time with the players and managers. One game at a time. God, I hate it when they say that, but sometimes it's necessary. And look, I really believe that though. But look, I think they're not over celebrating wins, despite what people think on the outside. That's fine. They won't listen to the noise that came after the Liverpool game. Trust me, they're not. As soon as they got in that change room, enjoyed the celebrations. When they're back at the training ground, the focus was on West Ham. That's the mentality of Mikel Arteta. He wouldn't allow his sides to do that. We saw it a little bit last season in times, in games, when it became complacent. He doesn't want that anymore. And they're ensuring that won't be the case. But look, it's going to be tough. You mentioned the T word. They're not going away. They're not playing particularly brilliant football, but they're finding ways of getting wins. They're not out of here. They're a dangerous side. We have to admit that sometimes. And City and Liverpool are going to be really, really tough. But at the moment, everybody else is looking at Arsenal as well. And after Sunday, a lot of the attention is on Arsenal. And what can Arsenal do? And Arsenal played second, which we know we struggled with towards the end of last season. They were last to play out the big teams at the top, and they put in a performance like that. That, to me, speaks volumes. And am I ready? Are we ready? We should be ready. I want to be on that open-top bus. I want to be there, believe me, and I will be there in some capacity, shape or form. I am going to be on that bus. Look, I can dream. And I hope that we are celebrating, whether it's Premier League, Champions League's going to be interesting. Can we bring this form that we've now picked up over the last month into the Champions League next week? Who knows? But all I'd say is for Arsenal fans, it's just exciting. It's exciting. Mm-hmm. And we should embrace this, and we should be positive. And we can dream. Of course we can. Why not? But look, just enjoy this ride that we're on, because at the moment, yeah, it's a hell of a lot of fun. I tell you that. This last few games, I've loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I love that. Brilliant summary. Brilliant stuff from you. And Tammy Steele's our chief like officer. Hit the like button if you've enjoyed this content, everyone. I love my conversations with James, and especially as he spends time around the team and stuff. I have too. A lot of our listeners have had a feeling about the Champions League. Many of them have said that it's easier maybe this season to win the Champions League than it is the Premier League. I mean, of course, you've got Real Madrid, but is it that season where you've got to make it count? Bayern Munich aren't on fire yet. Man City, I think, have been through their blip. They've got De Bruyne back now. Haaland's back from injury. They're going to be the ones to beat in that competition too, but with it being at Wembley, which is the home of Arsenal. forget the home of football. It's the home of Arsenal. But yeah, thank you for coming on, and definitely get well soon, James.
He's
not feeling tip top yet. He is here. You can find James at James Green in UK. On social media. What have you got coming up that Gooners should be looking out for?
Oh, what have I got coming up? Well, I'm training for a marathon at the moment, running the Brighton Marathon at the start of April to raise money for the wonderful Saying Goodbye charity, who look after families who have suffered baby loss, something, as you know, so very close to my heart. Training, that's tough at the moment. It's taken a lot of time and a lot of my legs. Just feel like the legs are just done. I am dotted around. I'm hosting some charity events. I'm back at Sky Wednesday. I'm heading down to Crystal Palace to sit down with Jeffrey Schlupp. I'm covering Brentford Liverpool on Saturday. So yeah, dotted around. So we'll see where the
love
next
it.
Month takes me.
Love but, it, love it. I have to say, I really enjoyed your hosting when I was in Cyprus over Christmas and you were in studio. The Christmas jumper was hilarious, but the suit you were wearing, there was one that had like a burgundy line going through. It was very, you look cool, you hit every point on the old swag right there. Keep smashing it, keep doing an amazing job. Hope to see you doing more hosting stuff on Sky. You're absolutely brilliant. Go follow James, everyone. At 11 o'clock, it's 11 o'clock my time. At 7 o'clock your time, switch over to Harry's channel. I'll be joining Harry Simeu for a little bit of a chat. And then this week, look out for shows with Shaban from TalkSport and also Susie Rack from The Guardian coming up this week too. Going to get stuck into some Arsenal women conversations as well. What is going on? And is Jonas now the one under pressure? I think so, maybe just a little bit, but we'll get stuck into that next week. James, thanks so much for joining. Squaddies at ease. We'll see you soon. And as Super Kev always says, don't forget to tell your loved ones you love them. Night night.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform. Please stand clear of the discussion doors. The next stop is Highbury Squad.